Soycle. Who's the most fun to drink with of the Republican lawmakers? Todd Alba did decide to text us who's fun to get a drink with in the GOP.
Fantastic.
Todd also confirmed that Robin Voss has virtually no sense of humor.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the No Sour, Ha Ha Funny Power Hour.
Yes.
And the 1 o'clock hour where we lighten things up a little bit and talk about human interest stories or facts of the day. And this day, Monday, February 20th, the second half of this hour, we are going to be talking to Rich Smith of the Over Our Head Players. Now, this was your longtime friend.
Yes.
And this is a place where you have done some theater.
Yeah, we did a lot of shows together.
And so this is in Racine.
Yes.
And so I had never heard of this theater. So we're going to talk about it more in the half hour, but just give a little tease as far as what the theater it is and who Rich is.
Okay. I met Rich Smith at the Racine Theater Guild doing a show there. And then Rich and some friends kind of formed their own company, the Over Our Head Players. And initially we had nowhere to perform except George's Bar in Racine.
Okay.
So we did theater in the bar for a number of years, which was great because the sight lines were terrible and we had to build a little stage, and then the lights were there so they'd cut your heads off for the audience in the back. But they stuck with it and eventually then purchased this building, the 6th Street Theater, and have turned into this little powerhouse where they do the Snow Dance Festival.
Okay.
10-minute plays, all original, and they get submissions from around the world now. It's a global... They have become a global phenomenon, and I am so proud of them.
I'm so excited to hear more about him, meet him, because he's going to be in studio.
He is. He's coming in.
And to talk more about that and just the, I feel like there's something that's so powerful. I had a little bit of this when I lived in New York, of meeting people who just want to create stuff. And like, it's not about getting booked for a job. It's not about getting famous. It is just like, I have this idea, whether it's a sketch or doing improv or doing a 10-minute play, that it's like the compulsion to create or the compulsion to perform, and finding the people who just want to do that, even when there's literally no money. Sometimes it actually costs you money.
Oh, yeah.
To do it.
This is a nonprofit. They're certainly not getting rich. They do it because they love it.
Yes. And so I'm very much looking forward to that conversation coming up at 1:30. And in the next segment, a little on this day in history, the historical event that inspired one of my favorite women's sports movies.
Oh, yeah. It's a good
film. Of all time.
Yep.
And so, and has a Wisconsin connection. So we will talk about that in the next segment. But today is President's Day. It's one of those holidays that I kind of, unless you have it off, I think you kind of forget. Like, you could have told me it was not President's Day, and unless I was a big shopper that was like, oh, yeah, there's a bunch of sales.
Go buy sheets.
I think Mike actually said that to me. He's like, oh, there's President's Day, so we should look for stuff for the house and see if they can get anything. But it is, it's a holiday that I feel like I don't think about. And I forget that the origin of this holiday was celebrating George Washington's birthday, which that is on February 22nd. And then in 1971, the holiday was moved to always be the third Monday of February. And now it always falls in between Abraham Lincoln's birthday and George Washington's birthday. And some of us get another 3-day weekend out of it. But it's interesting because This is on The Bulwark. Lindsay Chervinsky, who is a historian, has an article called President's Day is a Weird Holiday. And it has been since the beginning. And so she kind of documents so much of the history of this holiday. But the overarching point that she makes, which I had never thought of until reading it this morning, is that in a republic, instead of the monarchy, it's weird that we celebrate presidents' birthdays.
That's true.
And like, it's like, because it came from celebrating the king's birthday. Like, that was a holiday. That was, I don't know if it's still a holiday, but like, that was like in the turn of the revolution and us becoming an independent country. That was a holiday that you celebrated the king's birthday. And so the fact that, and she makes the argument at the end, which I would agree with, is in that, should we not, if we're going to have holidays, federally recognized holidays, honoring presidents, should it not be for the things that they did versus the day of their birth? And I would say I totally agree with
that.
Yes,
that makes complete sense. Absolutely.
As far as like, oh, like, let's celebrate the Emancipation Proclamation and get that day off of work or whatever we do to celebrate, versus you were born.
Well done.
And you didn't really have a lot of say in that. And it doesn't really have anything to do with, unless you're really into horoscopes, who you became as a person. And so I don't know if that's going to change. I have imagined there's a lot of other things we would want to change before that. But I thought that was a very interesting reflection and observation of this pseudo holiday. And so, but speaking of presidents, and it's one of the news of Jimmy Carter, opting to go into hospice instead of continuing care. And I don't think they have not released the
diagnosis.
I mean, he's 98.
Right.
So let's call it old age. It's
kind of like he's had cancer. He's had, yes, you know, he's had health issues over the last few years.
But it's kind of like when the Queen died last year and then they finally released like the cause of death and it was like old age. You're like, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Surprise.
And so he's 98, which is incredible. Run.
Longest surviving U.S. president.
And, you know, it's interesting. And he's going to receive hospice care at home in Georgia and remain and spend his remaining time with his family. And, you know, just kind of talking about some of his, he was a peanut farmer. And then he defeated Gerald Ford in 1976, and then he had a single term marked by the energy crisis, an historic agreement between Israel and Egypt.
Yes.
The normalization of relations with China. And then basically once he didn't win re-election, he's basically just worked as a humanitarian with his wife, Rosalyn, since the 80s, since 1980.
Yes.
And he has, yes, you're right. He's had melanoma and it spread to his brain and his liver and he survived that over the last decade. But I saw this, you sent this to me as far as, I think it was in Washington Post,
yes,
the uncelebrity president. But even besides this WAPO write-up, even Charlie Kirk. Yes.
From Turning Point USA?
From Turning Point USA.
What?
The grown man who somehow still looks like a prepubescent, annoying teenager.
Got a weird head.
He pointed out, it's one of those things where, could you just say something nice? Because he basically was like, use the opportunity to say remark on Jimmy Carter's unaffluent life as far as continuing to be a humanitarian, live in a two-bedroom house.
That they built in 1961.
Yes, live very modestly compared to, and this is the same argument that point that the Washington Post article has, of Clinton, Bush, Obama. Trump arguably was already rich.
So were the Bushes.
But certainly the Clintons and the Obamas, as far as how much they have been able to leverage
write a few books, give a few speeches,
do a couple podcasts, yep, produce a couple documentaries, and how wealthy they've become. And I guess to a certain extent, I'm not criticizing either, because I was thinking about this on the ride in, knowing that we were going to talk about it. And it, like, if you were in that position, Jane, do you feel like you would go one way or another? Because I have to be totally honest. If I had the position of power and notoriety to pivot after my terms, like my service in whatever presidency, or even, you know, any other kind of very, because AOC as just a congresswoman could probably be fine for the rest of her life if she just wanted to go do speaking deals,
right,
and stuff like that. Like, she's a celebrity. I gotta be totally honest, and I don't know if I would turn it down. Like, I feel like I would do the thing and be like, all right, let's make a podcast. Let's make a movie. Let's use this to create more stuff and then also get paid to do it, versus the very modest life that he chose to live. And I'm not saying there's one that's better or worse, but it should be commended that he was just fine living his life and doing the work that he was doing, that made a big impact on the world.
Oh, my goodness. The Habitat for Humanity projects that he's worked on over the years, and he, even when he was well up in years, mm-hmm. and I think he had fallen, and there's a photo of him with this huge bruise on his face, and he's hammering away at yeah. some Habitat site, and I just think, whatever you think about his presidency and the job he performed as president, Jimmy Carter is a stellar example of a stellar human being.
Yeah, I agree with that. And he lived a really good long life.
Yes.
98.
Yes.
Nothing to squawk at. So, yeah. So it's great to be able to go out on your own terms, so that he's made this choice. And I'm sure it'll be a matter of months until we talk about him again and in his, in his passing. But certainly on this President's Day, worth noting the life that he's lived so far.
Absolutely.
All right. When we come back, women's sports, but like a long time ago. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Well, I was just wondering, because I couldn't figure out why you would throw home when we've got a 2-run lead. You let the tying run get on second, and we lost the lead because of you. Now you start using your head. Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Why don't you leave her alone, Jimmy?
Oh, you zip it, Doris.
You zip it, Doris.
There's no crying in baseball.
There is no crying in baseball. I don't know if I ever cried in my, I think I cried in Little League. I think I got pegged in the back once that I certainly cried then, but I was 9. All right. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Metnair. And today, on this date in history, was the premiere of the All-American Girls Baseball League. It was formed with franchises in Kenosha and Racine.
Yes.
But February 20th. And I was only 6 when A League of Their Own came out.
Oh, wow.
But I remember seeing that movie in theaters and loving it immediately. And I don't think I realized what a big deal that movie was, and certainly didn't understand in historical context,
right,
what a big deal the All-American Girls Baseball League was. But what was, like, did that, when that movie came out for you, was it, did it, like, because you were an adult, but right. like, did it make an impact on you at all?
Oh, definitely. I loved it. And two, that's a story I had never heard about.
Yeah.
Didn't even know that this had existed. And the other takeaway from this that is just completely catty. Rosie O'Donnell and Madonna overact in that movie so badly, it's hilarious. It's worth watching just for that. Rosie is terrible.
Is she? That's like one of her first breaks.
I know, and she's so, but she's so over the top.
Because at that point, she was just a comic, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And it's funny. Yeah, I probably should go back and watch it and for the performances. Because obviously, Gina Davis is excellent in
oh,
it.
Oh, she's fabulous.
Tom Hanks is excellent
yes.
in it. But did you have you watched the new Amazon series?
I watched the first couple. And it was really interesting.
And I love, because you know, so Abby Jacobson, who's the creator of the show and stars in the show, she got Penny Marshall's blessing.
Because Penny directed the first film.
Because Penny directed the first film. And part of the conversation, and I do recommend watching the series, because the series really tries to tackle the stories that were not really... The public wasn't ready for those stories in 1992
because
with the movie.
Yeah, because they're more controversial.
Well, it was how many queer women played.
Yep.
How black women were not allowed to play.
To play.
And some of the more honest storylines. It's still a narrative. It's not a documentary. But as far as talking about that and talking about what the women who were drawn to play really were like. And I think often, so much as we're in this like era of so much television, that... what a two-hour movie can't do, a 10-episode series can,
yeah.
right? As far as, like, character development and storylines. And so, because I think that's really true, as if, instead of just kind of this, like, glossy, oh, girls, they let girls play baseball.
Wasn't that cute?
Instead of actually thinking about who they were as people and what this meant to them and what their lives were like before and what this opportunity meant. But the one thing that they did get right, though, is the uniforms.
At the end of practice today, you all have to get fitted for your uniforms. And this is what they're going to look like.
Pretty darn nifty, if you ask me. How about that, Billy?
You can't slide in that.
I like it.
Hey, that's a dress. It's half a dress.
Excuse me, that's not a baseball uniform.
Yeah, what do you think we are, ball players or ballerinas?
That's a short. I'm gonna have to squat in that thing.
I can't wear that. My husband will kill me.
Ladies!
Excuse me, sir.
Ladies!
Excuse me.
If you can't play ball in this, you can't play ball with us. Right now, there are 38 girls getting train tickets home who'll play in a bathing suit if I ask them.
Oh, there's no pockets for my cigarettes.
There is no smoking. There is also no drinking and no men. All of your social engagements will be cleared through your team chaperones. Plus, each of you will have regular classes at Charm and Beauty School.
For what?
Every girl in this league is going to be a lady.
And I'm pretty sure that was accurate.
Oh, I believe it was accurate.
And I'm pretty sure those same rules did not apply to the men who were playing professional baseball.
I would bet you are right.
Just we know what's best for you. So if you're going to do this.
Here's how you're going to do it.
Here's how you can't smoke. You can't drink. You have a chaperone.
We're going to clear all your anything, you know, your calendar is now our calendar to dictate as we determine.
And yet a lot of women played. And those, it's interesting. This is on baseballhall.org that they have more information about everything that happened with that. And they have some of the old pictures of the real women.
Very cool.
And it is really, really cool as far as, you know, it's interesting that there is no professional baseball for women now. I mean, we have the WNBA, we have professional women's soccer.
Baseball never came back. Yeah, I don't know why.
Unless I'm totally missing something that's just, I'm not aware of. But it is interesting to think that there's softball, but there's no...
National baseball.
National baseball for women. So, very interesting, but thought that was a feel-good history moment. But when we come back, Rich Smith from the 6th Street Theater over our head players is here. Can't wait to talk to him about the history of this place and all the times Jane was on stage. So stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Business, I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything that traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Medner. And we are so excited for our guest this half hour, Rich Smith, who is the managing artistic director at Over Our Head Players. It's Over Our Head Players, but it's also the 6th Street Theater?
Yeah, so the 6th Street Theater is like a project of the Over Our Head Players. We got our own space. We grew up and just got our own theater, so we named it that so people could find it.
Got it.
Because it's on 6th Street.
So it's on 6th Street. So Jane was strange. I had not heard of this. So I grew up in Madison.
All right.
Doing theater there. I am a theater kid.
Love it.
And we have Jane and I have a shared passion for the arts. We have a bucket list today now to do a play together.
Oh, let's do it.
With all of our extra free time that we have.
Oh, yeah.
But eventually we want it. Yeah, so maybe you can help us find a two-person play that we can do together. But Jane was like, I want to get Rich Smith on because the story of Over Our Head Players is so great.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so
why
don't we just start with you telling the story?
Rich, get up on that mic for me, would you?
Sure. Can you hear me better now?
That's better.
Is this okay? Thank you very much for the Ethel Merman lead-in, by the way.
Of course.
Outstanding. So, it was like early 1980s, and we had a group of actors and comedians. We actually did comedy sports for a while in Racine and Milwaukee, and we wanted to do some theater, and I had done a couple of things with Janie at the Guild. And we had a friend who owned a bar, and we found a couple of plays, and we started doing theater in the bar. And we thought it would just be this one-time thing, and then it started selling out. And the bar's full, and the bar owner at the time loved it, you know, because he was making a lot of money on drinks. And our green room was upstairs, and backstage was actually in the bar itself. So they would close the bar, hang up curtains, and then open up the side room for the audience. And so when we left the stage, we would literally just be standing at the bar. And we would have drinks off stage, and you could smoke in the bar then. And so there were some really unique stories about missed entrances and things because we were busy doing other stuff. But
very serious actors. We were very, very serious, dedicated actors.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, Andy DeSalvo missed an entrance because he needed one more drag on his parliament before he won. But anyhow.
Because obviously this is a point where you could still smoke inside.
This was the 80s.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this
Absolutely.
Is the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah, yeah. So that went on for 7 years. We did that, and we didn't know what was going to become of it. And we just started saving our money, and we had a larger following. I was kind of going to school part time to finish my theater degree at the time, and so we took the cash and started our own theater. So that's when we started the 6th Street Theater, and that was 31 years ago already.
Oh my gosh, so, wow. Rich!
Yeah, I mean,
31 years.
By. I know it. I got a picture of one of the first plays Janie did with us out. I should have brought it in. Pictures don't show up too good on radio.
That's true. That's true.
Is it from Cheese Louise?
It was from Cheese Louise. Yeah, it was fun.
So So what were the kind of plays you guys were like? How would you choose? What you were you doing Shakespeare? Were you doing like Tennessee Williams? Were you coming up with your own shows? Like, how would you choose when it was still in the bar? Like, what was like the criteria of shows you would put up.
Well, so Racine is so lucky. There's another theater on the other side of town, the Racine Theater Guild, that is just fantastic.
Yes.
And been there for a long time.
And that's where we met.
Right. We were in the Odd Couple female version together. And I wasn't one of the Odd Couple.
I was going to say, wait, huh?
But I'm willing to do that if they ask me. But so we wanted to do things that complemented the other theater group in town because we were friends. You know, it wasn't like a competing thing. So we like to pick things that are a little more on the edge, I guess we like to say.
Okay.
You know, we're not going to shy away from language or subject matter. So we're kind of the off Broadway, and we're built of mostly comedians. So we lean on that primarily. But we're not afraid to do drama once in a while. So we mix it up, and that's kind of how we choose our material.
But Over Our Head players have also written their own material.
Oh yeah, we do a lot of original things too. Recently, we started doing the series. It's a series now, Kringle the Musical.
Okay.
So we wrote a musical about how Kringle came to Racine, and it went over great. So now we're writing Kringle the Musical Part 4 for next year. And its working title is 7 Mile Fair Lady. So we're gonna see what happens. So we do original stuff. We have fun. We don't take ourselves too seriously, and we've just been fortunate enough to grow this great audience. Our theater only seats about 90 people, so when we do something like Snow Dance that really sells out, you know, we do like 26, 27 performances, you know, just to get everybody in, you know, that we can before we say no, which is a great problem to have in the arts, you know. So we're fortunate, yeah.
And you're a nonprofit, you're a 501(c)(3), right, Rich?
Correct, yeah, yeah.
So nobody's making, you've been doing this for 31 years since you opened the theater. I didn't see your Maserati outside.
No, I'm still driving a Volkswagen Beetle, Jane.
But we were talking before you came in. Everyone does this because they love it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the wonderful thing about community theater, of course. But, you know, theater in general, people end up in theaters because they love it. No, very few of us get rich off of it, for sure.
And so I want to get back to that because listening to this story, it's like Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. That's the origin story of Steppenwolf in Chicago, is just a bunch of friends. And whenever I hear any of those, I mean, obviously some of those actors became very, very famous. Yes. But when they talk about how they started, it was just, they were all at, was it DePaul? That they were all in theater school and they just started doing plays.
Yeah.
And they started putting up and they would cross gender and play different roles, and everyone wanted to play different characters. And it was just an opportunity to play the characters that you may not get cast in because you are the ones producing it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so like that so much reminds me of that story of just like choosing your own destiny by just taking the leap and saying, well, I don't care if we get paid, we're just going
to
do it.
Yeah, we compare ourselves to the Steppenwolf all the time. No, I'm kidding.
Am I wrong here as far as the origin story being similar?
It is similar. The energy comes from the same place,
yes.
And it's love of theater. And good things come from great energy. And we were lucky enough to have this great group of people, Jane included, early on, that just loved doing it, got along together, had fun, and it couldn't fail. So a beautiful thing came out of that beautiful energy, and it's still going on.
We laughed so much
and
did... At least the few that I was able to do with Over Our Head players, we did some of the silliest plays I have ever heard of in my entire
So let's
life.
Hear some of those, because then I do want to get more into Snow Dance, because it's going on right now, but it's sold out, so people have to go next year. But I want to get to the origin story of that, but let's hear about some of the fun plays you were in.
Just a reminder, Rich Smith is our guest. He's with Over Our Head players in the 6th Street Theater in Racine, just talking about the theater and the founding of the theater. And the first one I think I did with you guys, Rich, was Murder at the Howard Johnson's, right?
I think it was. And that play, actually, that was brand new when we did it. And it went on to, it's kind of a popular play now. It's like a dinner theater thing.
Oh, I standard. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's Murder at the Howard Johnson's, about, you know, a guy who's going to murder his wife to get the money at the Howard Johnson's. That's act one. And then act two is it's in the same Howard Johnson's room where the guy's now getting murdered by the girlfriend he was leaving to go to the wife. I mean, it's just a twisted, goofy, fun story. Yeah, but I think that was it. Yeah, that was the first one.
The first one, and then the second one for sure was Cheese Louise.
Yes.
And we ended up doing that again because it was so popular.
Yeah.
And by far the silliest thing I have ever done in my entire life. It was so much fun.
What is the premise of Cheese Louise?
Rich, I'll let you explain that.
So Cheese Louise takes place in the Wisconsin Dells in the 1970s, where Augie and Louise own their own business. It's the Bump and Pump, which is a bumper car gas station combination. And a Chicago a Flatlander, as they call him, dies on the bumper car machine, and so they're all in jail. And they have to figure out a way to raise money to get a lawyer and get out of jail. So they put on a variety show called the Bump and Pump-a-thon to to raise money. And it's just goofy fun, just goofy Wisconsin fun. And it was such a blast. It was actually written by some people in Chicago, a theater group in Chicago called the Illegitimate Players. And we saw it down there in a little storefront theater back in the 80s and went to them and said, can we do this in Wisconsin? And they're like, oh yeah, take it. Do you need any money? No, we don't care. Just do it. So we
did. That's why all artists are poor.
Exactly. And so we've done that twice now. And Janie reprised the character Momo a couple times for us, and sold out the whole run. Sold out each time. Yeah, it's fun.
Have you done it? You've done it both times. Are you going to bring it back ever?
We're talking about it actually for our 30th
really?
Anniversary. Yeah,
really?
We're actually talking about it. Yeah, yeah.
That sounds like a great premise.
Yeah. The characters are all timeless and ageless, but you would have to say the Dells is so different now than it was in the 80s, you know, but you'd have stuff set it in the 70s, but that was great fun. Yeah.
And so with the it sounds like a lot of the shows are lesser known playwrights or originals.
Yeah.
And so, but what, as far as the actors who end up back then, today, is it equity? Is it just people who live in Racine and want to act? Or like who finds themselves in Over Our Head Players productions?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's primarily community theater.
Okay.
We, you know, the vast majority of us are volunteers. We started a program, like a stipend program, a few years ago where we bring in artistic associates for each season. And that allows us to have some really talented people in our company committed to the season, not unlike what a repertory theater would do. And so that helps. So we've got this sort of hybrid of mostly volunteers, but, you know, a few talented people we can keep around and use. And that system works well for us. It's such a small space. We don't have huge dollars, you know, to do a whole lot with. So that's the way we run now. Yeah.
And so do people in the community, is there an open audition?
Absolutely. And yeah, we do an open audition for every show, and it's fantastic. We have new faces all the time. And community, I mean, I think everybody listening has probably got someone, you know, a daughter, a friend, or someone who's performed in community theater or theater in general, or they've been an audience member. I mean, it touches everyone. And when you think about the value to a community beyond, oh, sure, it's going to give us entertainment, a night out, somewhere to go see the guy next door play Hamlet or whatever. I don't know. You can look at it any way you want. But it also reaches out to people like you. Like you say, you're a theater kid, and people like Jane and people, whoever else, who might live in another community if they didn't have this opportunity for them as artists to go and perform. So absolutely, it's all about people in the community.
I would have kept performing or at least auditioning for Over Our Head Players, Rich. It just became geographically impossible.
Oh, it was awful. Yeah.
You know, I was working really early mornings, and
Janie had that morning gig, and she would drive. She would spend the night at my place a couple of times with my wife at the time, and crash on the couch. And she was such an early riser because she had all those morning programs that she was doing at that time. You know, can I mention other radio stations? I don't have to, but but it was a joke because you know, we'd get home from a performance at, you know, 1 a.m. or whatever, and Jane would hit the couch and pass out, and then we'd get up at 8 in the morning, and Jane's already up drinking coffee, talking to the paper boy on the front porch, and.
We had some good parties, boy. We had some legendary parties.
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall back then. All right, well, we have to take a break right now, but when we come back, let's hear more about Snowdance and how that started, what it has become, how people get shows into Snowdance, because as far as you said, it's 10-minute plays.
Yep.
And it's submissions from all over the world.
All over the world, yeah.
And so, and what year did it start?
It started in 2005.
Okay, so over 5th is the 17th year?
This is the 19th year, technically, yeah.
Can I not do math?
That's why we're theater kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, seasons were, it was 04 or 05 season. So
okay.
I guess that's
all right. All right.
Now.
Well, we'll come back and talk about that. But our guest this half hour is Rich Smith, who is the managing artistic director for Overhead Players and the 6th Street Theater. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
When your heart beats like a drum, the closing, when the customers don't come, there's no business like, no business like, no business I know. You get word before the show has started that your favorite uncle died at dawn. And top of that, your pie might have parted, you're brokenhearted, but you go on. The turkey that you know will fold, you may be stranded out in the cold. Still, you wouldn't change it for a sack of gold. Let's go on with the show. Let's go on with the show.
Laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? My dad said be an actor, my son, but be a comical one. They'll be standing in lines for those.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and we are talking to Rich Smith, who is the managing artistic director of Over Our Head Players in the 6th Street Theater in Racine. And so you're in the middle of Snowdance right now. And so tell people what... I guess tell people how it started and what it's become.
Yeah, so we wanted to do, you know, we like to do new things, different things. And like short attention span theater in general is like, is grown in popularity with playwrights. Like people like writing shorter pieces. So we said, well, let's just do a 10-minute comedy festival, but let's make it obviously comedies. And let's let the audience vote on who they thought was the funniest play. And so years ago, we came up with the idea and we thought, well, maybe we'll get 30 or 40 submissions from around Racine or wherever, and we can tie it together with a little sketch material in between each one and introduce them and take them seriously. And then call our audience judges, as it were. And then at the end of the run, the plays that are the three funniest will give a cash prize, you know. And we didn't know what to expect. And that first year we did it, we got about 150 submissions. And it was like, well, that's pretty cool. And so we kept it going. And every year we average around 500 or 600 plays. The Dramatists Guild is aware of us. And it's really exciting now because Snowdance has been the premiere of a lot of these. So once in a while, you'll see like a compilation of 10-minute comedies and you open it up and then the original cast and directors and the inside of the script. And that's always a great honor, you know, so.
How cool is that?
Yeah, I love that. Cool. Love that.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
And so of the 500 to 600 applicants, how many do you end up putting up each season or each festival?
Yeah, so this year we had 720 submissions from all over the world. We've got one finalist that's from Florence, Italy. And it's a funny play. So we'll try to do as many as we can, but we like to keep the show around 2 hours. So with a little sketch thing in the middle and then say, all right, now here's play number 5 from whoever from whatever city. Boom. And then we just keep it moving. So we'll do 8 to 10. One year we did 11. This current Snowdance has 9 finalists.
That is a lot of no's. For those people. And so what's the do you read all 700?
Yeah.
Wow.
You do, Rich. You read
well,
every
I'm gonna be
single
honest.
One.
This year I probably like I tried to read them all cover to cover. This year I did less of that. I had some other people helping with what we call the triage process. So the triage process is when you take a script and you read it and you say, yeah, it should be reread. No, it shouldn't be read. And then we have a third pile that we call the police. And the call the police pile is usually because it's disturbing, and we want it to be read again for probably the wrong reasons. But
So, it's not a consideration. We just need to be able to laugh about it together.
Yes, yes. But this year we had a nice stack on each of the three piles. And but I always try to get through. This year was, you know, I would get through three or four pages of one, and you can kind of tell.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard. It's really hard. And people take it so seriously. And some people just submit, and they don't really, maybe they don't know what they're in for, because you can read one right away and go, well, this isn't even a comedy. It doesn't happen too often, but it happens.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, so the triage process is hard, because you never want to miss a good one, because all it takes is that one or two good ones where people are belly laughing to make the whole night, you know? So we always get into one and go, I can't give up on this. I got to finish reading it because it might be hilarious. And you get to the last page and go, darn it, it wasn't.
Did not redeem itself. Yeah, yeah.
Our guest is Rich Smith with Over Our Head Players and the 6th Street Theater in Racine, in the middle of Snowdance right now, which unfortunately is all sold out. But I want to point out too, Rich, that the actors all play multiple roles.
That was my question.
During Snowdance.
Yeah, so this year we have an ensemble of 12 actors and 9 plays, and I think there's like 40 different roles. So everybody's very busy, very busy. And then, like I say, we tie each play together with a short little sketch bit, you know, where we don't take ourselves too seriously. We talk to the audience, we explain the voting, you know, have some fun in different characters or whatever. And while we're doing that, the set changes going on behind us, and then we go boom right into the next play. So the audience is never, you know, there's never a quiet
moment.
They're
not just waiting.
Never waiting.
Twiddling their thumbs.
Yeah, it's a fun night.
So this will happen. So unfortunately, you can't get tickets, but save it for next year. So then once Snowdance is over, though, do you go back to a regular season of other plays?
Yep. Yeah, so Snowdance is near the end of our 31st season. We have one more season production coming up. We're going to do The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which is just fantastic. And we're going from comedy to drama, although it does have fun moments. Yeah. But, you know, it's based on the award-winning novel about a young man who's identifying with autism and going through a search to find out who killed the neighborhood dog. And on his journey, he gets some unexpected answers. It's a fantastic play. We're excited to do that.
That sounds really great.
Yeah, so it's total gear switch from goofy comedy. But, but it's a good challenge for us.
So when does that start?
And that opens on March 24th.
And so I'm guessing that one's not sold out yet?
Not sold out yet, but they're selling fast. So, yeah.
And if people want to audition, Rich, where should they go? And you know, what should they look for?
Yeah, you can get in touch with us through our website, overourheadplayers.org. And there is a I Want to Volunteer tab on that website, overourheadplayers.org. We try to keep things up to date that way. And we also have a volunteer connection group. So if you share your email with us, we'll put you on the volunteer link. And anytime there's an audition or anything going on, we get in touch with you that way.
And I just have to say, if you have time on your hands, if you were looking for a community, if you are looking for somewhere to have some wonderful laughs and develop some incredible friendships, talk to Overhead Players.
Yay. Or any community.
Or any community.
She's not usually this complimentary,
but I love that.
I gotta be
Thank
honest.
You,
We've known each other a long time. We've known each other for 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So I guess we only have time for one more question.
Sure.
What is your favorite role you've ever played?
Oh, that's tough. That's tough. The Snowdance 10-minute comedy ones are just so fun because you just go out and it's just a big blast and you just have a great time. I had the wonderful opportunity to play Lombardi at the Racine Theater Guild a few years ago, and that was probably my personal favorite.
We're talking about Vince Lombardi.
Vince Lombardi, yeah. So, yeah, how many times can a Packer fan be able to say they played Vince Lombardi?
That's
so
true.
That was pretty fun. That was pretty fun. But I did play Manolo Consensuelo in the female version of The Odd Couple with Jane.
Because I was Oscar. I was Olive.
You were the Olive.
Amazing.
Your character. That's one of my favorites as well. I couldn't let that one go.
Well, check it out. This song, I can't wait to go with you, Jane. Let's go see the next one together.
Absolutely.
Over Our Head Theater, Over Our Head Players, 6th Street Theater. We will link their website to our show notes today. Rich Smith, thank you so much for spending time with us
today.
Thank
you, guys.
Was
I love the
delight.
Program. I love this energy for this hour that you guys do. Thank you.
Oh, this is so fun. All right. Well, stick around for Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian or the Chad Holmes Show. We will be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.
Don't you know everyone? Ha, 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 ha
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.